Hello, Coffee House Shops listeners. My name is Freddie Gray, and I edit The Spectator's US edition. I know you're all huge Westminster enthusiasts, but Brexit is over, and the big story of 2020 is going to be the American election. So I would like to urge you all to listen to my Americano podcast, where we discuss everything that's going on in Trump world and Democrat world. If you go to spectator.co.uk/Americano, you can listen to it all.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bulls. So today it was Prime Minister's questions and Jeremy Corbyn went a little bit personal. He was talking about the Jamaican deportees case and this is what he had to say.
If there was a case of a young white boy with blonde hair who later dabbled in Class A drugs and conspired with a friend to beat up a journalist, would he deport that boy, or is it, or Mr. Speaker, is it one rule for young black boys from the Caribbean and another for white boys from the United States?
Katie, what do you make of Jeremy Corbyn going on this attack line?
I think it was an interesting attack line. I think Boris Johnson was clearly taken quite aback by it. I don't think he took kindly to what he thought was a personal jibe, and I think was intended as one. I think it does touch on something which came up during the Tory leadership with regards to Michael Gove and whether different sections of society are treated differently, which often it does seem to be the case when they commit what we class as crimes in the law if they are caught. But I think what's interesting about this specific case is the reason this deportation flight is in the news is because you had a deportation flight with convicted criminals being sent to Jamaica, and ultimately some didn't get on that flight because there was a court judgment related to whether or not they had access to their phones to get legal advice. But the crimes committed in terms of the various people who should have been on that flight before the legal warning, they range from drug possession to things like murder and rape. And I think that once you have some of those things in there, I think it's easier for the government to say, as they have been saying repeatedly since it was stopped, you know, we are going to have convicted murderers and rapists back on the street, which I think makes it a slightly messier issue than just a single crime. And I think that means public sympathy is perhaps harder to get on this. I think what's interesting is you have both main parties thinking that they can get political capital from the situation. So Labour is saying that it is a travesty, the fact that this flight went ahead in the first place. There is a relief some of these people were taken off that flight, but it should have been them all. And they think that's playing to their base. Whereas you have the Conservatives who, this hasn't made them think twice about what they're doing. If anything, they've doubled down. You know, we've had briefings from Number 10 in terms of the spokesperson, reports of things they've been said in meetings, suggesting that Boris Johnson and his close team are, you know, enraged at the fact this court judgment came in. So both sides have taken completely different stances. And I think it'll be interesting to see how long that runs on for.
James, what is the government going to do in light of this? Katie touched on just there some of the fury that has been coming from Number 10 about the way that judicial review stopped something like this from happening. What can Number 10 do in order to tackle this?
So I think what you're going to see from Number 10 is an attempt to reform the judicial review process. That is going to be a politically fraught act. But I think Number 10's view is that the balance has shifted far too many things are being judicially reviewed, and that while, as maybe a generation and a half ago, there used to be a kind of a greater margin of appreciation for government, that has been reduced, and that is making the business of governing very difficult. So I think the government will be quite happy to push ahead with some reforms today. I think that getting them through, especially the House of Lords, where there's no government majority, is not going to be simple. I think that this flight raises two interesting questions. One is, what, we don't have the details of the individual cases yet. So what does drug possession mean? There is obviously a massive difference between someone who is clearly a relatively small fry in a larger network and someone who is in possession of who is clearly kind of far higher up the food chain of drug gangs and illegality. And then I think the second question is this, which is, at what point does someone become this country's moral responsibility? And my gut sense is that if someone moved to this country, you know, at five and has been here ever since, I do feel that they probably are this country's responsibility more than any other country's responsibility. Obviously, if someone arrives here at 15 or 16, it's a totally different question. But I think this is going to be a perennial issue about what this is, you know. And you know, for example, there we had the appeal that Shamima Begum the other day lost her appeal against being stripped of her British nationality, a case that I personally thought was very troubling.
And James, last week the government announced that it would be bringing forward the ban on new sales of petrol cars and hybrid cars from 2040 to 2035. Today, Grant Shapps may have slipped when he said that possibly this ban might be brought forward even to 2032. Does he mean that?
I think there's going to be a consultation on the precise date. I think he's saying it could be earlier than that. I mean, this sums up one of the things that we were all blinded to by Brexit, which is just how big a commitment getting to net zero by 2050 is, if you're serious about it. And if you're serious about it, you need to start doing these kind of things. I mean, there is an ironic question, which is a lot of the carbon is emitted in the manufacturing of cars, and so basically encouraging everyone to go and buy a new car, is that, you know, there could be an ironic effect where you boost carbon emissions. I think the government also needs to tread very carefully. I think a lot of people are very irritated right now. Generally, this government gets away with it because the irritation is aimed at Gordon Brown more than them. But yeah, government actively encouraged them to buy diesel cars because it was thought that they were better on the emissions front. Now it's been found that they're worse on the air pollution front. Mm-hmm. So you end up paying a special levy to drive into London. I think some people who bought hybrid cars feel really cross that the resale value of their hybrid is dropping, because they bought those hybrid cars because they thought that was the kind of greener alternative, and the government was pushing them towards it, and the government is now pushing them towards fully electric vehicles or away from hybrids. So I think the government do need to tread carefully here. I mean, there is also another issue, which is, you know, across the industrialized world, the car industry is in secular decline. The UK car industry obviously has a particular challenge with Brexit because it has constructed these supply chains that cross Europe, and they are convinced cannot absorb much friction. But there is a broader question here, which is, if you are talking about 2032, you know, the car industry is very doubtful whether the car industry is ready for 2035. Pretty much certainly isn't ready for 2032. I think this is a challenge. I think the other big issue that the government has got to address is, you know, are you putting in place the infrastructure that makes electric cars a viable option for people? You can't, you know, if you are in a situation where either the battery life is such that people can't, you know, manage any journey over an hour without having to stop or recharge, or you're in a position where people are finding it difficult to recharge their car, then you've got a big problem.
I think what's interesting too is if you look at the Tories' new electoral coalition and the voters they are going for. Now, clearly you can't stereotype people completely, but I do think some of the environmental... I'm pausing because Fraser's just brought in... Is this another Scottish treat?
This is deluxe. This is marzipan chocolate. It is so nice.
I thought you were on a diet.
I am on a diet, but it can be tempered by chocolate indulgences.
I hate marzipan.
James has outstretched hands begging a wee piece.
But I think if you look at the new voters the Tories got on side in the most recent election, I do think that some of the environmental changes they have to make to meet this target would have potential to be quite unpopular when you look at fuel cars switching to electric. And if you look at the areas where Extinction Rebellion is the most popular, or you see at least more people tweeting in support of them or for heading out for an hour from their work, it tends to be in cities. So I think they might have difficulties there if they are going to try and implement it near any election.
I think it is fascinating that this government will keep, we expect, will keep fuel duty frozen again in the budget, right? So the immediate price at the pump people pay, they're not prepared to touch. But they are prepared to make these incredible commitments about what they're going to do in possibly just 12 years' time.
And Katie, speaking of things that are unpopular, Rebecca Long-Bailey last night signed up to a pledge from Labour Campaign for Trans Rights. Part of the pledge is that they will expel any Labour members who express transphobic views, as well as saying that trans rights and women's rights have no conflict. Now, there's been a backlash in the party amongst members on this. Do you think she did the right thing by backing something like this?
Depends. I think as soon as a politician takes any side of the debate in the trans debate, you make enemies and you attract criticism. So I think one option, probably the most risk averse, is to try and avoid it as a topic. But I think that is increasingly hard to do, particularly in a Labour leadership race. I mean, I think that she could have managed to avoid some criticism, but I think as soon as you're going to speak on this, you are going to turn off some of the membership.
The challenge here is you've got to respect women's rights here and women's rights to places where they feel safe. And I think there is clearly a difference in how people perceive their safety in, for example, a female changing room or a female changing room which people are admitted into whose biological sex is not that of a woman. I mean, gender might be a social construct, but sex is a biological construct. And I think it's important not to forget that fact in this debate.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes. And don't forget that James and Katie and Fraser are going to be bringing you a live Coffeehouse Shots on the 11th of March on Sajid Javid's budget. So they will be in front of a live audience at the Emmanuel Centre. And if you'd like to join, you can buy tickets at spectator.co.uk/budget special. And I am also still looking for a podcast producer. So if you'd like to apply, Katie, don't laugh. So if you'd like to apply, please go to spectator.co.uk/podcast job, where you can find out more about how. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.